You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome to a special edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham. And alongside, we had a new face here. Maybe not, you know, you're familiar with him from the podcast of Champions. You see his work over at Bruin Report Online. But David Woods on Twitter is joining me in studio. He, of course, covers the UCLA Bruins for many, many years. He's doing that over at BruinReportOnline.com. And since we're going to do like a little preview show of USC-UCLA, we're mixing this up a little bit. I know it's a different time. It's a Wednesday. It's an afternoon. But I thought it'd be a unique opportunity to get someone in studio that really knows the Bruins top to bottom. Big Chip Kelly fan.
When does he get here?
Yeah. David Woods. Thank you so much for coming in, Mr. Woods.
It's an honor. Just this office, it's so impressive. You know, I just feel, you know, I'm a little bit out of sorts here sitting in this chair. But I'm going to try to make – here, I just got to – hang on. Put that there. There we go.
Nice. So if you guys don't know, so David and I, we've known each other for a long time. We cover different teams. We had kind of run, I think we were just talking to ourselves at a high school event. I don't know, this is probably like
75 years ago?
I know, it's like eight or nine years. Something like that, whatever it was.
We were watching the great Mike Juarez.
Yes.
Who was playing over at Redondo Union.
USC and UCLA ties. I don't know how we just kind of came up with an idea like we should do a Pac-12 podcast because we had done like a recruiting video somewhere in Westwood, like you and me, and people loved it. Like we were talking about the classes for both schools and people just kind of loved. We seemed to have good
chemistry. Yeah, just two weirdos sitting by a playground talking Deshaun Holliday and the 2015 recruiting class.
That was kind of crazy. Yeah. But yeah, that was we love it. So we started the podcast of Champions. We've been doing that I think since 2015 or so, and it's been a lot of fun. So and David comes here and we do he doesn't call it a simulcast, but we will record our podcast and we will do a live video show on the. You can follow us at Pac-12 Podcast over there. We do it on that YouTube channel, and so he's very familiar with this chair. It's just a little different format. We're not doing our, you know,
Pac-12 Roundup.
We're not doing any of that stuff. We would normally have our little sound effects. We got the
USC Trojans
taking on the
UCLA Bruins.
But make sure you check out the show. It's a lot of fun. Mostly, it seems like a lot of USC and UCLA fans, at least they're fighting on the message boards about. But we have fans from all over the Pac-12. Kind of coming in and talking.
Let's be honest. Let's call them listeners.
Listeners.
Let's not call them fans.
They might not be fans. Yeah, but we wanted to get David in for like kind of a short show. So again, sorry for the time change, but we're going to preview USC and UCLA. It will go up in podcast form as well. But this is like our video show over on our YouTube channel. Please, if you're watching live, thanks very much. Smash that like button. You know, like that up there very much. We like that, and you can follow us on Twitter. At Inside Troy. You follow me on Twitter at Inside Troy, David at David Woods on our YouTube channel. It's also Inside Troy. Please subscribe to that channel as well. And David, where else can they find you?
BruinReportOnline.com and Twitter. And I spend, you know, about half my day on Twitter. So yeah. You can find me there pretty regularly.
At least for now, unless it goes away.
Well, even then, I'll just be shouting into the void.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Apparently, Elon Musk said, like, if you have your – so I have a blue check mark. Apparently, it's going to go away unless I pay $8 a month.
Wasn't it white just until the other day ago?
Was it a white check
mark? It was a white check mark, and then it became a blue check mark again.
Oh, I don't know. But I think it's going to go away, so I might lose my blue check mark because I don't think I'm paying
You didn't pay the price. You didn't pay the piper.
I'm not paying for the blue check. I don't know what. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But whatever. Like,
yeah.
But yeah. So wanted to. We're going to get into the show. Wanted to thank our sponsor over at the Podcast of Champions, MyBookie. So some of you guys might not have heard of them, but I do picks. We do our picks against the spread every week. David's beat me by a couple games this week, but I've been doing pretty well. We're both over 500. I'm 40-36-1. David's 42-34-1 against the spread. And I've been doing all the bets over there. Every time I make a pick, I put a bet over at MyBookie. There's a lot of sports books to choose from, and you need a platform that makes it simple for you to bet and win like MyBookie. They have a huge selection of odds, props, contests for all your betting needs. If you want to bet USC, UCLA, the Pac-12, all of that, you can do it over at MyBookie. And if you sign up today for free, you can use the promo code Pac-12, so that's Pac-12, and you'll get a half deposit match, any amount up to $1,000. So that's pretty cool. Free money in your account. Promo code Pac-12 to claim your deposit bonus and give yourself a competitive edge. When you play with MyBookie, you're not just betting, you're joining the winning team. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. First time I've done one of those on Tunnel Vision.
That was a gorgeous read.
That's not bad.
I'd give it a 9.5 out of 10.
That's not bad. Like, I did, you know, I don't really like pre-read these or whatever. Sometimes we just kind of, you know, riff. Sometimes you have like a little script, right? You sort of.
Yeah, but if you like money, MyBookie.
Yeah. Mark wants to know, you know, you can put your comments up on the screen too. I'll try to put them up. And if you have any questions and stuff, Mark, why is it Bruin on the show? LOL. Well, we want to preview the USC UCLA game. And David's great. You know, He's going to be. I think Dave and I both try to be brutally honest about the teams that we cover. So if there are good things, we'll say they're good, and if there are bad things, we'll say they're bad. Like, we would both probably admit that these defenses are in the subpar range.
I would go one step further and say they're both horrible. But here's the interesting thing about the Pac-12 this year is there are three teams with a good defense, and then everyone else is bad.
Yeah,
absolutely atrociously bad. USC and UCLA are both in there, but I will say this, looking at the updated stats, USC, it's at the top of the bad. It's at the cusp of middling, nationally now.
Really?
It's 87th in points per drive allowed.
They got better. Even with the Cal game, because the Cal game was bad. I mean,
but then you add in what they did to Colorado, lowly Colorado.
So that,
and look, it's absolute numbers. Points per drive is absolute. It's not taking into quality of opponent, so it doesn't matter that it was Colorado that scored 17. It's a team scoring 17.
Gotcha. All right. What do you make of the – so we have six Pac-12 teams. We did our show, Podcast of Champions, before the college football playoff rankings came out. They put it way later. I mean, mm-hmm. It wasn't later, but they put it between a couple of big basketball games.
Which, yeah, Michigan State, Kentucky. Who cares?
But that was double overtime. But USC is the highest team, number 7. UCLA is checking in at 16. You know, Oregon State sneaks in the rankings at 23. Do you think that's about where the Pac-12 team should be? Or
yeah, I mean, I think the quality of the top part of the league, I think, has improved over the last couple of years. It's certainly not as the Pac-12 last year was historically bad, maybe the worst the Pac-12 has ever been. This year, I would say it's not great, but it's much better than the ACC, and it's, you know, in that middle ground where it's within shouting distance of, you know, the Big Ten. But it's, you know, I think six teams is about right, and none of them in the top four, which sounds about right, given that nobody is undefeated because this is the Pac-12.
It is. And, you know, the good thing, and this is what Larry Scott didn't grasp, when he talked about the parity, which I'm going to take credit for. That was my question at the Pac-12 championship game. That, you know, I'm like, I told Dan Weber, because I couldn't get down there, like, would you rather have a team in the playoff or parity? And Larry Scott's initial answer was parity, and he backed off that, but that was his mindset. That showed you what he was thinking. Like, he'd rather have parity. When Stanford is 3-9 and beats Oregon last year, like, that doesn't help the Pac-12. You know, it's fine if Washington beats Oregon. You know, Arizona beating UCLA, like, that's kind of borderline, like, probably not good, but we've kind of avoided that for the most part this year. This past weekend was the first time any of the top four teams lost to someone that wasn't in the top four, but that gets you a lot of teams up there ranked. And I think that's what kind of the Pac-12 needed. This could have been this could have been 2-9-1 teams, mm-hmm. but it's still going to be, you know, USC controls their own destiny. UCLA needs some help, right? To win this game and beat Cal to make it to championship.
You know why they need help?
Why?
Because they lost horribly to a 3-6 Arizona team at home last week.
That wasn't very good, but
no.
But like, even when we were recapping USC and Arizona, and you were kind of like poking some fun. I mean, that was a team that looked very spark. Well, they had some sparks on offense.
Of the bad teams in the Pac-12, of which Arizona is one, they have something that the other teams don't, which is a side of the ball that's actually useful. Like, their offense is actually good. Their defense is a trash can. But the thing is, ASU, Stanford, Colorado, both sides of the ball are bad. Like, just straight bad. Arizona, yeah, they've got that one dangerous side of the ball. But the thing is, for UCLA, you can't score 28 points against Arizona when they're running out that defense. Yeah, you might give up 34, but while giving up 34, go ahead and score 52.
That was me. So, like, we kind of know some of these teams. We've covered the Pac-12 a lot. Like, it was definitely concerning for me to have, like, a Jack Plummer throw for over 400 yards against USC's defense, even though they've struggled at times. Like, they, Cal really hasn't scored outside of scoring 49 on Arizona. You know, you could look at that. Maybe it's an anomaly or whatever. They had a better game against Colorado next week. But what that was the one thing that would I be concerned most about. Like, I thought Arizona would score. But like you said, you're going to put up a lot of – like, it's hard to not put up points on this Arizona defense. Johnny Nansen, for God's sake, what's going on there? Like, what's your assessment of that? Because that would be the thing I'd come away most concerned of, that, you know, Charbonnet had a good game, but they just didn't put up a whole bunch of points.
So there were a few things going on. Number one, I think UCLA's offensive game plan was extremely limited. I think they thought they could go into that game and not like roll the ball out and just win, but I think they thought, well, we can pare down the playbook. We don't need to show a whole lot. Let's just get through this one, running like our base, you know, menu of plays. And I don't think, you know, the guy who does our scheme breakdowns every week after the game, he, I thought, had a really good read of it, which is Johnny Nansen was on this staff last year. If anyone's going to have a pretty good understanding of what concepts Chip Kelly likes, it's going to be an assistant coach who was on the staff last year. And so I don't think there was an understanding that maybe they have to put a little bit more nuance into the game plan going against a team like that. But it was just, you know, the usual assortment of runs, the usual assortment of pass plays. And Arizona had it well schemed and well scouted. And then on top of that, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and this, you know, it's probably related, Dorian Thompson-Robinson played his worst game of the year. He looked much more like the 2019 version of Thompson-Robinson and not the, you know, pretty elite playmaker we saw from the first six or seven games of this year. And when you add that all together, it just, you know, you scored 28. They ran the ball incredibly well, even with the kind of limited assortment of plays. But two things I would say take away from that game that are problematic is Thompson Robinson has not played as well as he did in the first half of the season over the last three games. And then on top of that, UCLA's offensive tackles have been a tire fire of late. Against two bad pass rushes, ASU and Arizona, allowed a ton of pressure. I think Thompson Robinson was pressured on something over 35% of downs, passing downs in each game. That's not gonna do anything for your offensive efficiency. And a big part of it was right tackle Garrett DiGiorgio. He's really, really struggled. And again, ASU and Arizona are not very good rushing the passer. You know who is?
Who's Ryan? Good at it?
USC.
They are pretty good at it.
Yeah, USC is like a top 25 sack rate unit this year. So I think there's potential worrying signs there, and I think it's going to require a very good game plan from Chip Kelly. He's generally brought his A game for this sort of game plans, yeah. But he definitely needs to bring in this one.
I mean, but like, I think him coaching the sort of run schemes that they've put together, that might be his best coaching job. Just the way that UCLA runs the ball. I think that might, I don't know, what do you think? Like, as far as, like, he's been pretty good as a game manager, I think. I mean, they go for it, I think, the right amount of time on fourth downs and things like that. But maybe not the, you know, some of the time management stuff, but all the coaches kind of screw that up for whatever reason. But the run game, like the run game plan seems to be very good.
Yeah, I mean, Chip Kelly could probably make a run game out of you and me. could probably make that happen. I think designing a run game, very good. Designing a game plan when he's, you know, got a, the thing is that Arizona game was like, that was a coaching fail, but for the most part, he's really good at identifying a defense's weaknesses and exploiting it. It's much more like almost like a basketball coach's approach, where you find a single mismatch and then you just go after it over and over and over again. That's what Chip Kelly likes to do with his game plans. I would say from like a game management standpoint, he's good at knowing the percentages for the most part on fourth downs, going for it at the right times. A little bit of like, I don't know if it's meat-headed old coach stuff will creep in at times.
Me hit an old coach.
Yeah, you know, just like I've been a football coach for 30 years and, you know, what stuff I learned from 20 years ago is still kind of creeping in the back of my mind sometimes. Yes. For the most part, though, he plays the numbers on fourth down, which is good. Most coaches are doing that these days, or much more to an extent than they used to. But I would say clock management is not a strength. I asked him about the middle eight today, and he seemed to understand, like, the idea of it. But it's just, you know, timeouts and what they're used for. Like, a timeout is much more valuable for the 40 seconds of clock than for, you know, preventing a delay of game penalty. And against Arizona, in a game that was obviously developing into a shootout, like, obviously it's the kind of game where whoever has the ball last is going to have a chance to win or tie the game. Most important thing is managing your time at the end of a game like that. Absolute most important thing. And he spent a timeout to prevent a delay of game on second and eight with like 12 and a half minutes to go. That's just, that's not good. That's bad game management. These guys are paid way too much money to screw up things like that.
I agree with you there, but they seem to always do that for whatever reason. Right. You mentioned the whole Johnny Nanton thing and, you know, the former coach from being on the staff. There's a lot of former USC coaches now, maybe not from the last year, but so Clancy Pendergast is still.
Oh, yeah. It's a Hall of Heroes. Hall of Hall of Trojan greats. Clancy Pendergast.
Who you always thought should
Tim
be the
Drevno?
Head coach.
Hell yeah, baby.
You thought he should be the head coach at USC.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think Pendergast, whenever, I mean, after this season, when Lincoln Riley moves on for the NFL, get Pendergast back over there.
So he's acting defensive coordinator probably still this week?
Yeah, yeah. Bill McGovern, I don't expect to be back. Definitely not this week. I don't know if he'll be back next week. He's dealing with some sort of health issue.
Okay.
So we wish him the best. Clancy Pendergast is an analyst, but he's been effectively coordinating from the box. He can't do any of the on-field coaching stuff that McGovern was able to do, but really McGovern was just watching anyway. So I think Pendergast is mainly doing that role.
Okay.
There have been some changes defensively with that. A little bit more blitzing, but then some really absurd third down calls.
Did he like drop 10 and rush one?
Yes. There was a two-man rush on a third and 18 that Jaden Delora got to a fourth and three, which then was converted.
Okay.
So a little bit of consternation among the UCLA fan base there. But, you know, they're going to have to do what they got to do. I mean, I think the only other option would have been to have Ken Norton Jr. do the defensive coordinating. And I don't know if he was, you know.
He was an NFL defensive coordinator.
He was. I just don't know if that was, you know, if he. I don't know. I have no idea what the conversations were there. If it was, you know, with Pendergast having the experience and only being an analyst, it's easier to just put him in that role than to have somebody else do a linebacker coaching. I don't know.
So you mentioned Pendergast, Tim Drevno, offensive line.
Ken Norton Jr.
I mean, UCLA guy, but coached under, he got a coaching start with Pete Carroll at
USC. Because who was it? Carl Durrell told him, no, sorry.
Carl Durrell didn't want to hire him, so Pete Carroll did.
Exactly.
Well, you know. It's really okay. It's like you're trying to go work for like RC Cola, and you're like, no, you're not good enough. And then coach, like, we'll make you president.
And that is why Carl Durrell is such a great coach.
No longer coaching. Probably won't coach anymore. There's others, right? Oh, Chad. I was funny. I was talking to Justin Dietich at practice yesterday and asking like what he saw from film, you know, UCLA. And he had mentioned Chad, like, you know, because they would go against him in practice and stuff. So. I like Chad. I liked him. He was cool. Like Pendergast was weird. Is there other? I like Drevno too.
I think that's. Maybe there might be somebody sneaking around in the analyst group, but I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
All these guys who were analysts last year, like Drevno and Pendergast, are suddenly in much bigger roles. Which
Drevno was an analyst.
Anytime you can take assistant coaches from basically the worst period in USC history, and you know. Get him into much more prominent roles at UCLA. You got to do it, right?
We have a comment from Dale. Pendergast is hilarious. He can't recruit and can't coach. Interesting. I want his job. That's like me getting paid for watching Netflix. But he does have a similar recruiting philosophy to Chip Kelly, right? Like they do have like a similar philosophy.
Yeah, very, very similar
They're
philosophy.
Very
Don't do it.
Nice.
Oh, boy.
So watching this UCLA team. I mean, obviously the offense stands out. You mentioned like 2019 DTR. And I think in the beginning of the season, there was a lot of people sort of just waiting for like DTR to like drop the ball and or kick it backwards or something.
Right.
And he's been, I mean, you're what, 50 or 60? The crazy thing is Lincoln Riley coached against him.
Yeah, like, no, he coached
Kyler Murray and DTR were head. Like, how insane! I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah, and no, he coached and he coached against the version of DTR that was like empty-handing, fumbling all the time. Like, just I'm running and the ball's not here anymore. No, and that's the thing is like Dorian's been, I would say, minimum level competent since 2020 and actively good since the beginning of 2021. I think a lot of people, and understandably, wrote the book on him. I mean, he's been there forever now. I mean, he's been starting games for now 5 years. A lot of people wrote the book on him after the first 2 years, and he's a young guy who only played really 1 year as the starter at quarterback in high school. Most guys who come into college football starting as a true freshman, they've played a lot more high school football than Dorian ever had. So he's improved a lot. I mean, he's gotten a lot better. Even this year, I mean, he's had basically one poor game, and even in that game, if you look at the stats, nothing like what he was doing in 2018 and 2019. He turned it over once. He's a much more competent quarterback even when he is not playing his best. And the end result is he's going to have, no doubt, his statistically best season, and we'll see if he can bounce back. He is also another guy who's historically been pretty good in this game. He's gotten, you know, he's put up some real numbers. So we'll see if he's able to bounce back this week. This would obviously be the big one. No one will remember Arizona if he puts up, you know, four touchdowns and 350 yards against USC.
Yeah. We have a bunch of people. Make sure you smash that like button on the YouTubes over there if you're watching us live. And let us know. Shout out in the chat box if you're a UCLA fan. I know Dave put this over on Bro, sorry, we kind of put this together last minute or whatever, but that's sort of our brand. Like, that's how we do things, David.
Yeah,
and
that's
I.
how the POC works.
That's what, yeah. So yeah. I try not to let that bleed into my like regular stuff, the stuff I actually get paid for.
But I infected this one.
No, this is my fault, but it was nice of you to kind of come on and do this. I thought it'd be fun to just do like a little different feel of a tunnel vision. And these are great. And I've had a lot of fun. I don't know, like, these are cool when you do like the live video thing, having people in the chat, like, as we're talking, and our regular television show, we'll take live calls and stuff too. We didn't have a lot of time today, so we're not going to do that. But I like this. I mean, it's great to, we always put ourselves out there. We open to all kinds of criticism, but to get the instant feedback from fans is always kind of fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's been a lot of fun on the POC. It's great to see all these lovely Trojan fans extending so much respect and cordiality towards the Bruins in the chat here.
Are they? UCLA fans only have Blackberries. No YouTube app. Okay.
Friends don't let friends ruin their lives.
Oh, I'll put that one up.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's good. We both do a pretty good job of kind of poking fun of the schools that we cover. Now, it was easier the last couple of years when the teams we covered stink, and then now that they're good,
yeah,
which is great. Like, announce you're going to leave, and then then they get good.
I'm eager to return to my comfort level, frankly. UCLA being 8-2 right now. But yeah, it's been funny with the announcement this summer, and then both teams picked this season to be, I don't know, good for the first time in like 10 years.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is pretty funny. You're like, oh, I mean, is it Larry Scott being gone or whatever? We're going to do like a 5-question thing, so you can check those out on the different sites that Dave and I have sent each other questions and stuff. But I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on the defensive side, and you bring it. There were some good transfers that come in, the pass rushers from North Texas, and I think there's been some good things that the UCLA defense has done, but there's also been, you know, some problems too. Like, where do you feel like the strengths and weaknesses are of the UCLA defense?
Well, so I would say it's sort of like USC to an extent, which is that the one like kind of underlying strength is the pass rush. They have enough to I wouldn't say consistently and regularly, but like intermittently get a 4-man rush, which is something that was more or less an impossibility the last few years. Leatu Latu, who's a transfer from Washington, the Murphy twins from North Texas, Carl Jones, who's a holdover, combined, they've done a pretty nice job. Leatu Latu, for much of the season, was really dominating from the edge. He's kind of dropped off the last few games. I'm not sure if he's nursing something. The edge rush has been pretty good. And then on the back line, Mo Osling at safety has been a tackling machine, basically been like the whole reason that they've been good at preventing explosive plays. That's the quality of UCLA's defense, is that they don't allow a ton of explosives. I think they're averaging like 5.5 yards per play given up, which in this league constitutes a really good defense.
That is really, yeah.
That's really good at preventing explosive plays. The problem is UCLA's been bad in the red zone, and they've been bad allowing just kind of short yardage conversions. And against mobile quarterbacks, they've had a lot more issues. Edge containment has been a problem. Against Bo Nix, it was a problem. Against Jaden Delore, it was a problem. I'm anticipating it'll be a problem again this week. And it's not necessarily they're allowing a ton of rush yards. It's just they're allowing mobile quarterbacks who are comfortable getting outside of the pocket and throwing from outside of the pocket. They're allowing them too much comfort doing so. Gotcha. They're allowing them to get outside and do that stuff and reset their feet and then look downfield. And those kind of broken play situations, it puts a lot of demands on the defensive backs. And they're just not bringing down the quarterbacks in those situations enough. They're allowing these wide open lanes. Not a ton. I would say this is where the Chip Kelly talent acquisition strategy is kind of coming home to roost, because there's just not a ton of front seven speed. There's not a ton of front seven athleticism. I would say Carl Jones is a plus athlete. Leatu Latu is a plus athlete. The Murphy twins are not. Pretty much nobody in the linebacker core generally is. And that's where they're falling short.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
It's funny because like the USC defense has their own issues as well, but they, it's like you do some things well. Like they do get after the passer pretty well. I think they still have problems with mobile quarterbacks, but they give up a lot of explosive plays, and it could be on both sides of the ball. Like sometimes they're a good run team. Like I think against Utah, they did a really good job shutting down. You know what Utah would love to do first is run, but they gave up, you know, crap loads of points, you know, yards through the air. You let the tight end go for 234 yards. Like, you're probably not going to, you know, play well. They've given up a lot of explosive plays, but then they also get the kind of big home run plays on defense too. They've, you know, forced so many turnovers. I don't know if they still lead the nation in turnover margin, but they were up there, you know, for a long time. They have the, you know, turnovers there. But and so it's kind of funny. Like, it's more of a bend or break, but feast or famine too. So it'll be interesting to see. UCLA can get some big chunk plays, you know, and so if it's a handoff to Charbonnet or dump it off to Kazmir Allen or, you know, DTR taking off and running, USC's certainly been susceptible to giving up the big ones.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be, I mean, if my read on USC, and this is from a statistical angle, but also what I've seen, is that the UCLA's game plan has to revolve around the running game. I think there's too much danger in that secondary and with the pass rush to think, oh, we're going to do five-step drops and be able to throw it all over this defense. As much as there is weakness at the opposite corner, as much as there is weakness at the other safety, as much as there is weakness in at nickel, the problem is that pass rush. And then suddenly you've got, you know, Kalen Bullock picking off another pass because you're under pressure when you throw the ball.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it's going to be dependent on keeping the ball on the ground. I think there is some weakness, especially with the injuries for USC at linebacker. You know, just, you know, who's going to be available, what's going to be their, how healthy are they going to be when they play? And, you know, I think defensive tackle, my read on it is that USC is fine, but not great. The edge is where they've, you know, made a lot of their work. So I would just I would lean a lot on the run play, and then you know, try to RPO a little bit and see if you can attack attack those edges a little bit, get them thinking a little bit, so that they're not just keying on Dorian, especially with how bad the tackles have been of late.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to do some misdirection in the run game. But yeah, I mean, I think it's running it well in this game serves two purposes. One, you'll probably get some explosive plays because Zach Charbonnet is a freak. And then two, you keep the ball away from USC a little bit more, keep the possessions low, and, you know, hopefully allow for the possibility that USC makes more mistakes on offense than UCLA does.
Yeah, we saw, I think Washington did a really nice job of that in the first half against Oregon. Oregon's got this high-powered offense, and Washington kept, you know, Oregon just didn't have the ball that much. Second half, it just went back and forth, but I thought they did a nice job doing that. Running the ball more, which wasn't their MO. Obviously, running the ball is UCLA's MO. But you mentioned some of the health stuff. I'll try to give everybody like an update on the USC injury front, and then maybe you can do the same for UCLA. Both coaches are not very forthcoming when it comes to injuries.
Huh.
I think Lincoln Riley's, we'll talk about it a little bit, where like Chip Kelly's not. And Chip, no one's to the Kyle Whittingham thing where we're here's our starting quarterback until like they kick off, right, and then he's not. And then I talked to Petros in the booth about that, and he was not very happy. You know, it's like, what are your, yeah. I mean, it does not help the TV crew when you run like a 5-minute package of the guy that's not starting. And he said there's other times where you like just tell the guy like, hey, this guy's not going to start. Just don't say anything. And then they won't say anything. You know, I mean, it's not right. That big of a deal. But so no one's to Whittingham's level where they're just like full on deception. But so, you know, we saw Jordan Addison come back, play briefly. I talked to him yesterday and he said he's ready to go. He actually had some funny comments about what DTR said. A lot of people were kind of commenting on that. No USC players like took the bait or whatever, but.
Bait? He was just describing objective facts. They scored 60 last year, and they would like to do so again. How is that bait?
Fair, yeah. So it was funny, and so look, Addison told me he's like, you know, he's gonna put he said he's back. So he seemed very confident, even though, you know, he looked a little slow. We'll see. Mario Williams, the other wide receiver, warmed up. I thought was gonna play and did not. So he was really close. Lincoln Riley's not giving any definitive answers about those guys, but I'm guessing he's going to play. Eric Gentry just hasn't been around. He wasn't like warming up before the game and stuff. He would be the biggest name that you would think you would like to get back if you're USC, just because he adds a different dimension to the defense when you got like a 6'6" middle linebacker that can actually cover guys and run in space and stuff. So I don't know if he's going to be back or not. Were they saving him? Or I'm just not sure. But one of those things where if he could have played at all, I think he would have liked to get him in some of the Colorado game. But so I'm not really sure about him. But those are kind of like some of the the main guys. What about on the UCLA side?
Yeah, so we get no information from Chip Kelly on injuries. So it basically relies on us using sources and then what we observe in the 20 minutes that we're able to observe practice. And just so you guys get some insight into what UCLA allows us to observe, it's basically 8 minutes of them stretching, followed by special teams, followed by one round of individual drills.
Okay.
So nothing. No teamwork whatsoever.
The one thing, though, so we get about the same thing as far as what we can watch. But say I saw Eric Gentry do something at practice, we are not supposed to report on if we see an injured guy like play or not play. So
we can report whatever we want, but we only get 20 minutes.
Right.
So we could just make things up too. So here's the lowdown, the skinny, as it were, okay, is that Zach Charbonnet is practicing. I would anticipate him playing.
Okay.
Keegan Jones, his backup at running back, was not practicing, but he was in full pads. So
Kazmir Allen's not the backup, or?
Well, Keegan Jones is the true number two.
Okay.
Kazmir Allen is a starting slot receiver who has worked in the backfield the last few weeks because of some of the injuries.
Okay.
I would anticipate him still doing some work in the backfield. He was also back in practice after missing the game against Arizona and taking reps. I would anticipate him playing. Keegan Jones, I would not. I would say limited or out.
Okay.
Colson Yankoff, who's the fourth string running back, he's healthy and ready. And then they've got two other running backs who haven't played a lot. I don't know if they're preserving red shirts or what. TJ Harden and Deshaun Morrell. But running back was one of the issues. So that's it. That. The other thing, I would say Bo Calvert, who's a backup edge, he was in shirts and shorts for most of this week. I don't know. I mean, he banged heads in that game from what I observed, so I wouldn't be shocked if he's out this week. And then aside from that, they're pretty healthy. You know, they've dealt with some intermittent issues at linebacker. John Vaughns was limited for a little while. Kane Medrano was limited for a little while, but they're both back. I would anticipate them being pretty healthy for this game. It's just a question of running back, but it looks like they're getting some guys back this week.
Gotcha. We had a question from Trojan. Trojan, I don't like this guest. Who is he? Seems like he likes FUCLA.
No way. So he might have been. Huge Trojan guy. You've never met a bigger Clay Helton fan than this
look at,
guy.
Look at the background here. I'll put
yeah,
you.
Come
look
on.
Look at this.
I have this helmet right here.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah. So if you came in late.
Hi, howdy. Jeez.
This is my Pac-12 Podcast of Champions partner, David Woods, covers the Bruins. That's why we got him on here to give us a preview of USC and UCLA. I know we have some. Let me pull up some of these questions we got, and we'll kind of go through those. And, you know, I know you got to get out of here pretty soon, so we appreciate you coming in. Josh had a question in the chat. Why is nobody talking about how Lincoln Riley and Grinch had beaten Chip Kelly and DTR in 2018 and 2019?
I mean, is that really a data point?
Yeah.
Did you watch those UCLA teams? Good God.
It's kind of like saying that UCLA put up 62 on USC last
year. Yeah, I mean,
year.
UCLA put up 62 different... on a Clay Helton coach team. Right. I mean, it's apples to oranges at this point. I mean, Oklahoma at that right then was a playoff contender, and UCLA was going 3-9, 4-8, and blowing up the roster. So,
but UCLA, who did they beat? Like, they beat like an Oklahoma type team, like in that era, right? Or maybe like was it like Texas A&M or something? Or
in Chip Kelly's first 2 years?
Yeah, no,
no. No, they didn't win a non-conference game for 2 years.
So that was before.
Yeah, that was Jim Mora, his last couple of years. They beat Texas A&M in that weird shootout where they had the massive comeback.
Right.
Okay. Washington State 2019, just 2 years earlier.
But the crazy thing is, and when Lincoln Riley talked about this week, he's like, when he coached against Chip Kelly, it was Kyler Murray. You know, like, he's like, I think he's been in the NFL forever.
Yeah.
And he's like, DTR must have been like 15 years old. It was kind of funny just the way Lincoln Riley was just, he was like kind of mystified. Like, I can't believe I'm playing against him again.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, no, and it was because Wilton Spate started that year for UCLA 2018, and then he got hurt in the first game. And so Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who was the backup coming into the year, who they were hoping not to play, thrust into immediate action.
Gotcha. This one is from Graham. Which team has the most detrimental weakness? I like this question.
Ooh, that is a good question. Honestly, up until this past week, I would have said USC's defense, just that it was generally worse than UCLA's. But watching, honestly, for the purposes of this game, watching UCLA's offensive tackles and imagining what Tuipulotu is going to do in this game is probably the one area where I don't think UCLA has a great answer.
You know, I probably would still go just because the explosive play, like the USC's just given up so many explosive plays, and even against teams that aren't good, you know, offensively, like what we saw against Cal, I think that's where there might be the most vulnerability. You know, DTR can kind of get away from sacks just like Caleb Williams can. So even if there's pressure, you can kind of get away from that a little bit. And I think that the kind of talent that both teams have at quarterback, you can kind of mitigate maybe a good pass rush from the other team. But I'm not sure they're going to be able to stop. I think there's going to be some big plays. It's like USC on defense is probably going to need to force a couple turnovers and get a couple sacks, because I think they're going to give up some big plays. So that might be the answer for me. But
yeah,
it's a good question.
It is a very good question.
All right, let's go to Eric says, do we end up putting a spy on DTR? If so, maybe Bryson Shaw. USC spied a couple guys, and I think a lot of times, like an Eric Gentry would play that role sometimes, but Shaw could potentially do that. Have people been spying DTR? How effective has that been?
Arizona did a better job of it than most people do. You've got to play it really aggressively. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's pretty darn fast. I generally think spies on fast quarterbacks are usually overrated. You just have to play team defense. I don't think putting one guy, unless that guy's super damn fast, on the quarterback is really that effective. I mean, for example, UCLA ran spies against Jaden Delora frequently, and each time he beat the spy.
Yeah.
Because even when he put like a fast guy like Carl Jones out there, I mean, if the quarterback's a real athlete, they have an advantage in that situation. They also have pump fake advantages. I generally don't think it's a great idea. I think you've just got to play pretty good and aggressive play on your edges and hope you have some gap soundness from your linebackers.
Yeah, you got to contain for sure. You can't let guys like that get outside. It's funny, after the Arizona game, Lincoln Riley, I mean, he had about as much praise for Jaden Delora than I've heard him about anybody.
Well, he was having his good game week.
Yeah.
And then he had his bad game, and then he had his good game against UCLA.
But he was, I mean...
He fumbled it. How many times against Utah did he fumble the ball? Like five times?
It wasn't very...
And then UCLA is like a golden god. Against USC, he's a golden god. And then in between, I literally cannot hold on to this football. I don't know what's going on.
We have a couple of questions about this. Art, will Eric Gentry start against the Bruins? Art went over this a little bit before. I don't know. If I had to bet money, I would probably say no, but it would be one of those things where they sort of were like saving him up for the last couple games. It looked like other guys were closer than he was to playing, like Amari Williams and stuff, and then we just didn't see it all. And we're not allowed to comment if I saw him out of practice or whatever yesterday, but yeah.
Can you blink? Blink once.
For what?
For I don't know.
I'll blink twice. I don't.
Once if by land, two if by sea.
I'm not sure. I think we'll just see. Even if we see him warm up, like we saw Mario Williams warm up, like look like he was full bore and then didn't play. It would be a big help though for this USC defense. All right, we got like a few minutes left. I didn't see any other questions in there.
Somebody asked about Jay Toia.
Yeah.
This is one of the interesting things, and if you want some insight into how bad USC was last year, because remember the reports coming out of your spring ball. Where that Jay Toia was like the best defensive player.
Killing it.
Like just murdering guys.
Yeah.
He's been fine at UCLA, but he has not been a devastator. Like he's been a plugger. He's not like blowing plays up left and right. He's just a plugger. Pretty good one, but a plugger. And so if you want some insight into how bad that USC defense was last year, that right there.
Yeah. Dale, this guy's too reasonable to be a UCLA fan. I'm conflicted. I mean, he covers the team, but
yeah.
But I guess both of us are pretty. We both try to be reasonable to the point where we'll like make fun of the teams we cover.
Like, what did we just do? I brought up that the biggest weakness was on UCLA side, and you were like, no. USC is going to give up some explosive plays. They suck. So that's what we do here.
Yeah,
we're in our comfort zone when we are criticizing the teams we cover.
Rain sounds for relieving stress and sleep. That's quite a long name. Did we get Shane Lee back? Yeah, he's been back. He's been playing with like a...
He's like been back for a few weeks now.
Yeah,
right?
He's got like a cast on his hand. So him, Tuivasa-Sivi, Nomura, and Raylan Goforth kind of came back. So sort of three-man rotation inside linebacker. Against Arizona, they played a lot of dime, so they didn't use as many. But they really could use Eric Gentry. They're just not getting a lot of production out of that position. It's been that way around USC for a while. So some of it's talent, some of it's other stuff. We got another one from Eric, and then we'll get your kind of like pick and stuff. What position group for USC and for UCLA must step up the most? I like this.
I don't want to keep belaboring the point about the offensive line, so I'll not say that.
Okay.
I'll say instead linebacker. I think to keep Caleb Williams contained to the pocket has to be the number one goal defensively. And it's not as if he's not going to be an effective pocket passer, but prevent the freelancing, prevent the stuff where it's like a broken play and he throws it for 40 yards downfield and it turns into a touchdown. I think linebacker containment, playing their gaps really well. And I'm including the edge rush in there because they're whatever, outside linebacker defensive ends. But that whole group needs to play their most disciplined game of football this year.
I mean, I'd say pretty much the same on USC side. The inside linebackers we were just talking about, I mean, that's where I think you're going to need those guys to be making plays. If you get Shane Lee tackling DTR for like a 3-yard gain when he scrambles, that's great. If it's Kalen Bullock tackling him for a 12-yard gain, like that's bad. So I think USC needs much better play from their inside linebackers, and plus, you guys like Jake Bobo, who's sort of, slot and, tight endish kind of guy, like UCLA does the tight end stuff well. They run the ball well. I think it's going to be those linebackers going to need some.
Can you put up Graham's question, please? Because that one made me chuckle
Graham,
while you were talking.
Hold on. Let me do this. Okay.
Will this be Clancy's finest hour?
Nice.
Oh, boy.
It could be.
No. No. So the thing I'll say is I have it as like 60-40 USC winning this game.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if either team won.
No, I wouldn't.
But the idea of holding USC like under, say, 38 points is impossible for me to imagine.
Yeah, I think.
Literally impossible for me to imagine.
Like if UCLA wins, it could be 30, like 42, 38, 45, 38.
Yeah, it could be like that game. Or the reverse of what it was 2 years ago when it was like 43, 38.
Yeah.
I could see that. I cannot see anything where they're holding this offense down to under that. And so for UCLA to win, the offense has to be gangbusters. Like they got to score all but, I don't know, two times, and each time it's got to be a touchdown.
Yeah. John Lamb, will this game be sold out without tarps? And where's Teresa? Teresa, is the game sold out? The game is sold out.
It is sold out. They're removing some of the tarpage. It's going to be about 70,000.
That's pretty good. You know?
And they gave 6,500 tickets to USC. I know a priority for UCLA's AD was keeping this from being like a, you know, a 20 or 30,000 USC
yeah.
fan game. And so that was a priority to an extent. But I would anticipate it being a majority UCLA crowd. But of course, some USC fans bought from the UCLA allotment, as always happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know you got to go. It's the bottom of the hour. Do you want to do like a, I think we're both similar as far as like, it could go either way.
I'll go right now and say 45-38 USC. But I reserve the right to completely flip that when I write my preview, which will be due tomorrow.
Okay.
I don't know. Like the way I think about it, it's just playing the percentages. I think USC's as the odds have it, a slight favorite. And I think that's justified. And I have a little bit more to worry about with UCLA than I do with USC. USC's defense has a little bit more of a pulse with all those turnovers, with the sack rate. So playing the odds, yeah, they win by a touchdown.
I think it's somewhere in that, you know, maybe a 4-point win or something. But like I said, it could go either way. The one thing I like, I just like Caleb Williams' ability to just, he figures things out towards the end of the game. Like if whatever way the game is going, he'll sort of like, you know, if it's not going exactly his way, like we know from the UCLA side, if DTR has to throw it more than they've run it, they're 0-2. And when they run more, they're 8-0. I feel like Caleb Williams has won games where like the passing game wasn't working or, you know, whatever it was, like he figures out ways at the end. So I just have some confidence in him that he's going to be able to do that. Of course, if the defense just gives up a touchdown on every single drive, which is possible, it's going to be hard for Caleb Williams to beat that.
Be a fun game, though.
That would be fun, yeah. All right. Well, Dave, thanks so much for coming in here. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys all enjoyed a little different feel for a turn of listening. This is a pretty good preview of what you would get on the Podcast of Champions. If you're not listening,
yeah,
you should listen to it. We both work for a living doing this. That's the thing we don't make any money on. We just like doing it.
$0.
Yeah.
It's a labor of love.
Yeah. We have a lot of fun doing it. So go over to Podcast of Champions.
Ryan's paying me $700 to be on this show right now. $0.
Wait, I am?
Yeah, wow. We talked about that.
Remember? Did we really?
No.
Was I drinking or what was it? We should have had some beers in the
studio. Yeah, that would have been fun. I got to go pick my daughter up.
Oh, well, then maybe not.
Well, you know, going a little bit lit to school pickup isn't the worst thing.
She's not old enough to drive, right?
No, no. But she's starting to, we played a racing game this weekend at an arcade. She only crashed into the wall like half the time, and I only had to turn the wheel to go make it go the right way once.
Okay, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah. How old?
Nine.
Nine, okay.
Yeah, she's tall, though. She can probably see over the steering wheel.
Okay. I like it.
We're working with some tools there.
There you go. Future driver here in Southern California. All right, well, that is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham, and this is not the Podcast of Champions. This is Tunnel Vision. And so we're not going to do our regular Thursday show. This will act as that show. So sorry for we're not doing a live show Thursday night. But go watch the Thursday night football game if you got Amazon Prime and all that. And I hope you enjoy your time out there at the Rose Bowl. If you're going in person, get there early. Traffic's usually kind of gnarly. But I'll be out there. David won't be. The TV cover's playing it
up. I watch from TV, buddy. I got it made.
So I get to see Tracy at the press box.
You get
I don't
see
get
Tracy.
To see you.
You get to see Tracy and Mike.
Mike will be there. Like I love his tweets and everything. Yeah. So, but check out David's work over at Bruin Report Online, and I'll put our Twitter handles up at @DavidDavidWoods. It's where you can follow his very, very funny tweets. There should be some good ones. There could be some derogatory words thrown towards USC's way. That's sort of like what he does. during this week.
It's all fun. All for love of the game.
Yeah, it is. We have a lot of fun. Joe says, "Podcast of Champions and the Zodiac Killer rule." Yeah, we do have some really great callers and emailers on the podcast,
including the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. Yeah. So yeah, unfortunately, Stanford didn't do well against either of the teams that we. So he had a little hope when Stanford beat who they beat.
Notre Dame.
No, but the week before, they beat who? They beat...
they beat Notre Dame, and then they beat ASU.
Oh, ASU. After
there haven't been that many wins. Don't get them confused.
I know. There's only a couple. And they beat, like, baby. Colgate. They beat the
Colgate.
Toothpaste.
Yeah, they beat the hell out of toothpaste.
All right. For David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to Tunnel Vision. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.